I'm going to do that one more time, that intro music, because I know you guys like it. You know, why not do it just like three or four times? Because it's so good, you know what I mean? That Radical Agenda intro. When you hear that Ann Coulter coming in, she's like,
"That's it, it's over. Then we organize the death squads for the people who wrecked America."
You know what you call people you can't talk to? Enemies. And if we want to divide our society into armed camps of enmity, all we have to do is keep doing what we're doing.
A radical agenda, the event has turned into an opportunity for the left to push a racial and radical agenda.
Implementing their radical agenda is the only thing they care about. They're bad actors.
What they want to do here is ram their radical agenda down your throat.
These are great Americans. These are people that want to see great things for the country. You know, they try and build them like sort of a radical agenda. It's not a radical agenda. It's called the Second Amendment.
All right, on with it. Welcome to the Radical Agenda, the show about timeless ideas and news of the day and whatever's on your mind at 217-688-1433. Yes, this agenda is quite radical, and welcome to it, this 30th episode of the sixth stage of the pogrom. Today is August 25th, 2023 is the current year. It's a Friday as usual, and we are coming to you live from my undisclosed location where, you know, ladies and gentlemen, I have tried to make a point not to dwell on the whole Trump indictment thing, because I don't think there's really a whole lot for me to say on this subject that you're not going to hear somewhere else. I haven't read the indictments. I'm not going to. I know enough about our legal system to understand that whether or not Donald Trump broke the law has absolutely nothing to do with the process playing out on our televisions and newspapers. Drag a man into court often enough, and eventually he ends up bankrupted and imprisoned. It's really that simple. In this environment, legal analysis from qualified experts is of extremely limited utility, and I am, of course, but a famous pro se defendant. I do like to think myself to be one with a knack for, I don't know, reading people, however. I am occasionally proven wrong about this, but that, of course, is the nature of the art. And I'll tell you what, in an attempt to read Donald Trump, I see a great deal in the recently released mugshot heard around the world, and it confirms some prior conceptions, I think safe to say. Whether you like Donald Trump or whether you hate him, whether you think that he did a good job or whether you think he was a failure, whether you think he meant well or whether you think he was just telling us what we all wanted to hear because, contrary to all evidence, he thought that this was somehow a good way to win an election, the multi-jurisdictional shitstorm which has befallen him ought to tell you that he is not in league with the people that we hold in enmity. Whoever it is that you think is responsible for our political problems, be though there may plenty of disagreement on this subject, one thing we all know for certain is that they have the power to abuse the legal system. They are doing that right now, and Donald Trump is public enemy number one. Does that tell you anything about our politics? I'd go so far as to say, I think it does. If Donald Trump were working against you, do you think they'd be doing this to him? Of this, I have my doubts. Now, is he actually on your side? Well, as a matter of fact, I don't think he's particularly interested in what you think one way or the other. Chances are you're not somebody who has the capacity to be of a great deal of help to him, so I don't imagine it is your opinion that keeps him up at night. Donald Trump, like a lot of people in this country, at some point realized that there were really bad people wrecking our nation. He saw himself as having the power to do something about this, and he tried to do just that. Against all odds, he became the President of the United States. Stand by just a second here. You know, can anything just fucking goddamn be fucking working? Like, really fucking goddamn, like, yeah. So let's go over here. You shut the fuck up. Excuse me. What is, are you fucking kidding me?
So let's go over here. You shut the fuck up.
Yeah, you too. Why don't you shut up? I don't want to listen to you.
Excuse me.
The fuck? You're repetitive. It's like I just heard that 2 seconds ago. Shut the fuck up, loser. The fuck? I got a podcaster, though. I got this idiot talking. Donald Trump, like a lot of people in this country, at some point realized that there were some really bad people wrecking our nation. He saw himself as having some power to do something about this, and he tried to do just that. Against all odds, he became the President of the United States and found himself in Washington, D.C. without the vaguest idea as to how to go about enacting his plans. As any savvy observer of our politics might have predicted, he was thwarted and manipulated. Cunning strategists played on his character flaws, negotiated in bad faith, I should say, collaborated with the opposition party and media. They wasted time and ran out the clock to the 2018 midterms, handed the House of Representatives over to the Democrat Party, and then tried to wait out the remainder of his presidency while the Democrats impeached him. They leaked to the press, lied, flattered him to his face, and conspired behind his back. They let criminals run amok while good men were sent to prison. And in the end, they robbed him of his 2020 victory. I don't think that what happened on January 6th was something that could accurately be described as an insurrection, but I am amused at the delay between the outbreak of the chaos and the moment that Donald Trump told those people to go home in peace. I think his statement that you are very special and his instructions to remember this day were the words of a man who had come to accept that he had no peaceful options left. He had come to realize for himself, as many of us did long ago, that no matter what he did, no matter how honorably he conducted himself, no matter what the law might be, the people he was up against viewed this conflict as a war. And accordingly, they were operating by rules of engagement that would be considered criminal even in a war zone. Were you born with the convictions that you hold today? Did you always have your current moral standards? Are you today proud of everything you have done throughout the entire course of your life? Of course, I doubt that this is the case. I surely cannot say this for myself. And I do not figure that Donald Trump is also differently situated. Think back to when you got red-pilled. For most of us, this happened a few times, of course, but I could tell you that my complacency was shattered in roughly 2009, and it had nothing to do with race or immigration or even politics, really. For me, it was the legal system. My conduct was nothing worth bragging about, to be certain, and I'm not going to get into the details today, but in 2009, I knew I was getting screwed, and I was so bothered by this that I decided to study the Constitution of the United States. Upon realizing that my government bore no resemblance at all to this document, I panicked and set out in search of others who knew that something was very wrong. This is how I discovered libertarianism. I spent years as a libertarian activist, and during that time, I never even bothered to inform myself about the subject of immigration or the complaints of anti-Semites. All I knew then was the government had screwed me, and these guys were against the government, so I informed myself about their ideology, and this caused me to embark upon an intellectual journey that ultimately led me here. I didn't have $10 billion. I wasn't a real estate mogul or a TV star. I knew I could talk, but I had never tried my hand at writing, and public speaking as an art form was nothing I had ever studied. I ran for Congress in 2010 as a write-in libertarian candidate, and though I likely cost the Republicans a seat in the House that year, I'll never know for certain how many of those write-in votes were for me, because there were too few of them for New York State to bother reading the names of. It is probably for the best that I did not become president in the year 2010. I probably would not have done a very good job even as a member of the House. I have made so many embarrassing mistakes since then and exposed so many of my personal flaws that even without the scrutiny of the mainstream media, intelligence agencies, and all the forces of evil trying to destroy me, I could fairly say that I have made worse than a fool of myself more than once. Had the forces that work against me today concentrated their efforts on me then, I'd surely not have made it even this far. So it hardly seems shocking to me that Donald Trump would be less than perfect. A man who was raised in wealth and privilege, shaking hands with crooks and greasing palms and doing all the things a New York billionaire must do to establish and maintain his position, is not going to be the picture of Christian virtue. He has been repeatedly divorced. He has cheated on his wives. He has donated to Democrats, worst of all. And we knew all of this before anybody had a positive thing to say about him all the way back in 2015. And so when people, you know, when people talk bad about Donald Trump, I'm made to think of this George Carlin bit from his 1996 stand-up routine called Back in Town. Let me pull up, actually, I meant to have this. George Carlin voting. This is why. I'm instead of reading this to you, I'm going to pull up the YouTube video and I'll just play it.
I noticed I don't complain about politicians. Everybody complains about politicians. Everybody says they suck.
Yeah.
Well, where do people think these politicians come from? They don't fall out of the sky. They don't pass through a membrane from another reality. They come from American parents and American families, American homes, American schools, American churches, American businesses, and American universities, and they're elected by American citizens. This is the best we can do, folks. This is what we have to offer. It's what our system produces. Garbage in, garbage out. If you have selfish, ignorant citizens, you're going to get selfish, ignorant leaders. And term limits ain't going to do you any good. You're just going to wind up with a brand new bunch of selfish, ignorant Americans. So maybe it's not the politicians who suck. Maybe something else sucks around here. Like the public. Yeah, the public sucks. There's a nice campaign slogan for somebody. The public sucks. Fuck hope. Fuck hope. Because if it's really just the fault of these politicians, then where are all the other bright people of conscience? Where are all the bright, honest, intelligent Americans ready to step in and save the nation and lead the way? We don't have people like that in this country. Everybody's at the mall. Scratching his ass, picking his nose, taking his credit card out of his fanny pack and buying a pair of sneakers with lights in them. So I have solved this little political dilemma for myself in a very simple way. On election day, I stay home. I don't vote. Fuck them. Fuck them. I don't vote. Two reasons I don't.
And so, Some of you aren't old enough to remember a time when comedians didn't talk about politicians. This might be shocking to you, but back then the most shocking thing about George Carlin was that he said the seven words you can't say on television, and by the way, not one of them was a racial epithet. More to the point, Donald Trump is exactly what you would expect to come forward for a time such as this in this environment. We should consider ourselves fortunate that we got this much, actually. He is a deeply flawed man who got rich in a society on the decline. Whether by some stroke of mere luck or by divine intervention, he made a decision that he would try to reverse that process. He told the most terrible people on the planet that he had a profoundly modest plan to merely tap the brakes on our ever-hastening demise. And before he even clinched the nomination of his party, there were riots in the streets and wild schemes to destroy him. People look at Donald Trump's presidency as a failure. I say it's a miracle the guy didn't quit. He could have handed the keys to Pence and walked away and had sex with a different woman every night of the week until he died and never known what it meant to feel uncomfortable. Instead, he made the best of what he had available to him with all of his many flaws. He fought to accomplish what he could, little though that may have been. And while he might not believe all of the things that you believe, he held his beliefs strongly enough that he expressed his love for the men and women who ransacked the Capitol in his name. He called them special. And though he did not grant them the pardon so many think it their due, this is more than they could have expected from anyone but him, because we do not live in a society where the wealth and power necessary to become president of the United States accrues to flawless men. Imagine you are him for a moment. Please do that. Well, you know, when you were a child, you might have heard this. You know, don't judge somebody until you've walked a mile in their shoes. And surely many of you would love to switch places with Donald Trump. You think this would be a joy, but I doubt many would last long in the shoes of Donald Trump. Men who live online anonymously, afraid that their wives or employers might find out that they had expressed an unpopular opinion, have the nerve to curse a man who took on the forces they claim to oppose, and now he faces the rest of his life in prison for doing this. You may live to see a day when you wish that a man so noble as Donald Trump might so much as understand some portion of your concerns. But for now, you have him, and you should consider yourself very fortunate for this. Take a look at that mugshot. As a matter of fact, for those of you watching the video, I'm going to pull that mugshot up. Let me do that. Let's look at that mugshot, because it's a thing to see, isn't it? Look at that mugshot. Imagine it is you looking into that camera. You're Donald Trump. You've lived the life that you've lived. You've just been hauled into the Fulton County Jail, which is like a notorious cesspool of a jail so far as American jails are concerned, by the way. You've lived his life, and now you're getting booked in Fulton County, Georgia. You're the front runner for the nominee to be the president of the United States for the Republican Party. The current president is unpopular. An unpopular war is raging in the country where your opponent's crackhead son became wealthy. Imagine the power of the presidency within your grasp as you look into that camera. You have a very important decision to make. Should you smile? Should you give the impression that you don't care? Should you give it your best poker face? Well, not if you're Donald Trump. Not with all of that power, the power to have your vengeance so near at hand. You know you cannot send the threatening messages that you wish to send. You've gotten in enough trouble for that already. You know you may soon have even greater restrictions placed upon your ability to speak about the matter at all. This is the most important message that you will ever send, and you must send it without speaking. That is not the face of a man who is in on the joke, ladies and gentlemen. That is the face of a man who is warning his enemies that he will have his vengeance, even if he must wield the powers of the presidency from a penitentiary. And I would dare say that you would be a fool not to wish him the best of luck in that endeavor. 217-688-1433 if you'd like to be on the program. And the more you talk, the less I have to. So please do give us a call. And if you would like to be on the show at all, call the number and get on the phone lines. There's a good possibility that we are going to end early today. And so if you want to talk to me, dial the phone and get on the line. 217-688-1433 if you'd like to be on the program. And the more you talk, the less I have to. So please do give us a call. And so now Donald Trump is back on Twitter. I would say that this is a lesser punishment for the Democrats than to see him in the White House, but that is fun nonetheless. He gets mugshotted, this thing goes out, and he immediately goes back on Twitter, which is a very Trumpian thing to do, I'd say. That's like, hey, you know what? I know I said I wasn't going to do this, but I do lie from time to time. I'm Donald Trump. Sometimes I change my mind, and then I do things that upset Democrats. And, you know, I can't really hold that. I can't hold that against a man. Let's see here. So there was the debate, the primary debate happened on Wednesday. To those of you who came to see me, it was very nice meeting you. Good seeing you guys. We have not had a listener meetup since I've been home until now. I am happy to report that it went off without a hitch, so we're going to do this again. You know, I've tried to exercise a great deal of caution since I've been home, perhaps too much, some might say. I certainly think that there's some merit to the argument that I've exercised too much caution, I'd say. But I'm very glad that we managed to do that. And we're looking forward to doing another one on September 27th. September 27th is the Republican primary, the second Republican primary. Hang on one second. Check, check, check. There we go. Okay. Now, all right. September 27th is the next Republican primary and debate, and we're going to have another one for that. And really? All right. We'll turn that down, and I'll come back to that. If you call in, you might hear some silence on the line, okay? So here's the other thing that's going on. I'll talk shop with you a little bit, okay? So I've been trying to... I'm a little bit upset about what happened during the episode with J.F. Gareppi, appropriately so, because if you know, like, that interview was great, and if you haven't listened to that yet, you're going to want to. But we had some audio problems that occurred during that show, and then right towards the end, the computer actually went, like, the CPU usage went to 100%, and there were some errors in the video and stuff. And so I'm trying to fix that. There's a bit of a problem in that. To try to rearrange things around here is a little bit of a task. And there are too many variables involved in all of my configurations, okay? So I had composed this email that I have not sent to you yet, but I'll tell you a little bit about it. Now, let me do this so that that caller can hear us. Yada, 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 yada. Okay. So hopefully, caller, you hear me while I'm on hold, and there's going to be a little background noise as I do this. I'm being told that this is a test. So let's try to see if this is a test. I heard you're making a test.
Hey, Chris.
Hey.
I can't hear you.
You can't hear me? He says he can't hear me. Okay, hang on a second. Check, 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 check. Caller says he can't hear me. Hang on a second. That's bullshit. Let's see here. Microphone. Oh, I know what I did wrong. I know exactly what I did wrong here. I know exactly what it is. Here we go.
I'm going to start listening
now
to you.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now, friend? You hear me now?
Yeah, you're coming in clear now.
Okay, all right. I know exactly what happened there. Thank you, buddy. Okay, so are you just giving me an audio check, or you got something for the audience?
No, this is giving me an audio check. So with Trump in jail, I think he's actually going to actually get the nomination, though, at least recently, because he's actually the second in the running.
You know, buddy, I got to tell you, of all the people in the world to give me a sound check, it's not you. You have consistently bad audio on your calls, and this call is terrible. The audio quality, I should say. So I don't know if it's you or if it's the phone lines, so I'm going to hang up on you. Sorry. 217-688-1433 if you'd like to be on the program. And the more you talk, the less I have to, so please give us a call. You, sir, I know you have consistently higher quality than him, so go ahead.
What's up, Chris?
It's good. Now I know it's not me. It's him. Okay, good.
Can you hear me, Chris?
Yeah, I hear you fine. You can't hear me?
No, I did, but I'm sorry, there was a lag. Anyway, let me get to the point. Your monologue kind of presupposed to me anyway that the assumption was that Donald Trump was, like, in opposition to the people trying to destroy the country, and that his goal was to try and change that, or, you know, I think you said pump the brakes. I don't know why we should make that assumption, because I don't feel like that actually happened. I think it's just as plausible or more plausible to say this was just another mountain for him to climb or another thing for him to conquer. And that it was like more of an ego, a goal for him rather than it was anything that he actually wanted to do politically.
And like, I'm interested in that. I'm interested to explore that theory of action. I mean, you know, if you wanted to, like, what do you think was the goal that he wanted to accomplish? Like becoming president of the United States or taking on the Democrat Party? Like, what is it that you think it was that he thinks he's accomplishing?
Becoming president of the United States and saying, I'm Donald Trump, the president of the United States.
Okay, so he just wanted to become president. You think he doesn't have convictions to speak of?
Not in particular, no. I mean, the guy's been all over the map politically his entire life, and he's talked about being president for like 30 years.
Okay, so I understand that, you know, he would want to become president. Why would he adopt the views that he purported to adopt to become president of the United States?
Because it was a viable path to him to do that. I mean, he had been exploring it for a number of cycles. I think he felt the Democrats were weak and there was a wide open field of Republicans, none of them very talented. And if he had gone after the establishment, it was a way for him to weasel himself in. And I think it worked.
My conception of politics is that, you know, going and taking on the most powerful people and being like, yeah, you know, you're all idiots. You know, don't get me wrong. I understand the idea that could be popular. It just seems to me that if I were going to go, I don't know, spend $100 million of my own money, that this would not be the safest of investments, say.
No, but like I said, I mean, he had been exploring, like, is this a good time to run for a number of election cycles? So the idea that he did something that was like, there's no chance that this is going to work, or I don't think it's going to be successful. He's passed up opportunities to run prior for that reason. I think he had a pretty good idea that it was a potential success for him to run the campaign that he ran.
Well, it seems to me that I have trouble viewing it that way. I mean, we're both just speculating as to what's in another man's head. So I don't know that we can. I don't know that either of us can assert with much confidence our position. But it's like, you know, it seems to me that what he did was very, very unpopular and dangerous. And there's not a whole lot of evidence to suggest that you go out, you start railing against immigration, and then you become president of the United States. I'm not sure that there's a great deal of data to support that position.
Well, not specifically that position, perhaps, but I think that it's been well known, at least since the 90s, that illegal immigration was a popular topic, particularly among the base of the right. And Donald Trump's been involved in politics with the Reform Party and things like that for at least that long. So I don't think that would have been an alien concept to him.
Well, I don't think it would be an alien concept, but as you mentioned the Reform Party. I don't know them to have elected many presidents.
No, of course they didn't elect presidents, but I mean, that experience with him was just more so to get him into politics and to start rubbing elbows or whatever you want to say with like the populist base of the Republican Party. So, I mean, I'm saying like, I don't think that issues that would have been popular on a grassroots level would have been something he would have been unaware of, and he was just doing this on a whim.
Well, you know, I'm not saying that it was a total whim. I'm sure there was planning involved. I don't think that he, you know, woke up one morning and was like, hey, Melania, can you go fill out the forms with the FEC? I don't think it was like that. You know, I'm sure there was research done. But, you know, it seems to me that everybody who wants to become president, you know, sort of goes about it in a certain way, and that Donald Trump did all of these things that they didn't do. Now, of course, you know, if you were somebody who had researched the subject and you were like, everybody hates these people, you know, all right, you know, there's merit to the argument, I guess, that that he's like, OK, well, do everything that they don't do and then the people will like you. OK, I can see that. But it is now evident. It might not have been in 2015, but it is certainly now evident that, you know, you take on these people and your life does not improve, to put it mildly. And so, you know, I'm not sure. He probably couldn't have predicted the absolute shitstorm that would befall him, certainly. And whether he would, you know, would he have done it had he known that? I think that is a subject of subject to more vigorous dispute, say. But simultaneously.
Yeah, I think he put. Yeah, again, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, he obviously thought he was making deals with people. You know, I think he thought that he had made the right allies and he was going to be able to use that once he got into power based upon the people he appointed. And I mean, you know, Donald Trump, if you read The Art of the Deal or you followed like his history as like a businessman, like
I read Art of the Deal.
Best trait. Yeah, his best trait has always been finding like the thing that looks like a piece of shit and turning it into like this, you know, thing where he makes a ton of money off of it. So I mean, like I think he looked at a situation that everybody else would have looked at and said, "Oh, there's no way that's going to work." And then he was able to see why that there was a path there. And I know you've mentioned before you don't like the term Finkel thing, but Arthur Finkelstein, like that tactic was used in his campaign to galvanize people against his enemies and things like that. And again, I know that that's not new to him. I'm just using that because that was somebody that he actually spoke to. And it was a very effective campaign in a lot of ways. So I don't think it was like he had these like grand convictions and he just went on a whim because he really believed in it and he didn't care what the outcome was going to be. I don't think Donald Trump's that kind of person. I think he definitely looked at it and felt he had a good shot at least getting the nomination. And so that's why he did what he did.
Do you think that a person can learn about the things that we learn about and be indifferent to them?
I think it depends. But, you know, in Donald Trump's case, I don't think that the things that he ran on are things that he's ever cared about, you know, in his own life. I mean, he's employed tons of illegal immigrants in New York in his work, for example. That's just one example. But I think he took issues that were meaningful to other people that he wanted to exploit for popularity.
Well, I'm sure that he did hire illegal immigrants in New York. You know, Elon Musk is now being sued for not doing that in a, you know, in a national security sensitive company. You know, and certainly as a New York real estate mogul, you would expect that his competitors would certainly do this. And, you know, I'm not saying it's virtuous by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, I know that I worked on a landscaping truck in Long Island, and we had to basically charge about twice as much as our competitors because we had a bunch of white guys on the truck. And interestingly enough, people were willing to pay that because they didn't want a bunch of illegal immigrants pissing in their bushes. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to find out that he had hired illegal immigrants. I think stories came out that, you know, that did conclude that rather definitively. You know, but it seems to me, you know, I hear Donald Trump speak and genuinely, like, you know, I don't think that somebody can come into contact with our ideas and be indifferent to them. I don't think that that's possible. There are people who come into contact with our ideas and hate them because they're monsters. There are those people exist, obviously. You know, there are people who want the destruction of this country, and so when they see somebody trying to defend it, they get positively angry and they want to destroy us. There are people who come across our ideas and they become radicalized, and there are people who come across our ideas and don't inform themselves very much, and, you know, they believe what they see in the New York Times. But I don't think there's people who understand our ideas and are indifferent to them. I think I don't know that that's possible. I have trouble conceiving of that. You see where I'm getting at?
Yeah, no, I hear you. I personally think that, you know, Donald Trump, none of the things that he ran on, he's ever shown conviction for across his entire life. And so I think he's a
That's exactly what you would expect, though, right? So, like, this is what I'm saying, though. So, like, yeah, of course, no, he didn't have these convictions his whole life. He did not. That's the whole entire premise of the thing, is that he lived his whole life not having these convictions. And even if it was a completely, even if it began as a cynical ploy, right? Like, he's like, I want to become president. How do I do that? Hey, you know, I spoke to Roger Stone, and Roger Stone told me that these people are pissed off about immigration and these motherfuckers won't do anything about it. You should do that, right? Okay, I better go learn all I can about the immigration issue, right? So that I can go out and I can dupe these suckers into thinking I'm going to solve their immigration problems, okay? So, like, that's what causes him to do it, right? So if that is the case, if he's like, okay, I'm going to go dupe these immigration haters, I better go and figure out what their complaints are. In the course of that, he's going to come across these ideas, right? And it seems to me difficult to conceive of a situation where he does that and is unaffected by what he discovers, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I understand your point. What you're saying, like, is if, you know, he hadn't thought about it, and then, you know, when he decided to try and be political, he thought about it. But again, he had been bumping elbows politically, you know, at least since the 80s, definitely in the 90s. He had been in rooms with David Duke, and he had been in rooms with Pat Buchanan. And then, you know, when he was in the Reform Party with them, he acted like he liked them. And then afterwards, he called Pat Buchanan a Hitler lover. It's like the guy just says whatever it is that is required for him to be successful at a given point. And I'm not even saying that's necessarily
which is why he's successful.
I'm just pointing out. Right, and that's fine. But my point is that the idea that he never heard about immigration until 2015, and then he got really mad about it and decided he was going to become president to fix it. I don't buy that.
I'm not saying he never
was well aware of these issues.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, good.
No, go.
No, I'm just all I'm saying is that I think that he's well aware of all the issues, and he only cares about what's going to get Donald Trump success, and I don't think that he really gives a shit whether immigration can solve one way or the other.
Well, you know, I want to acknowledge that, okay, like Donald Trump should, the reason Donald Trump is successful is because he thinks first about what's going to bring Donald Trump success. We could afford to learn from that, I'd say. I'm like, you know my views on this to some extent that, you know, just the whole entire premise of Surreal Politics that, like, you know, we are a movement of people who, much like the conservatives we complain about, you know, have this like this crazy notion of like losing with dignity. And I'm like, there's nothing dignified about that. And so, like, yeah, like if you want to do the noble things that you purport to want to do, then you must, you know, start to like incorporate into your moral code that there are things that you must do in order to protect those things. You know, you're living in a declining, decaying society where, like, you know, the most upright and forthright and noble and honest person does not succeed in politics. And so if you believe in your cause, well, then, you know, you're going to have to learn to navigate the environment. And that's exactly what I'm getting at, is that, like, well, Donald Trump is exactly the kind of guy that does that, you know. And so, you know, he says to himself, OK, you know, whatever his motives are, you know, I can't imagine that this was something that made him money. I understand that Kushner made some deals or whatever. Maybe I haven't bothered to inform myself about that a lot besides, like, I read a book in jail that was I forget the Kushner Inc. or something like that. It was about Jared and Ivanka, supposedly made a bunch of money. But, you know, Donald Trump, it seems to me, has not made a wise investment financially in this. I don't know that he could have predicted that in the beginning, but, you know, whatever it is, you know, obviously a guy who's going to become president has more motives than I want to do noble things, right? He's got to be an egomaniac. You have to have that sort of, like, you know, that. You have to have that mindset in order to even attempt the task, right? Unless you're, you know, unless you are some, right, you know, third-party candidate who's like, yeah, I'm just going to go do this thing, and all I really want is for people to hear my ideas. Now, like, if you want to be president, you know, there's shit that comes with that, say. And so what is going on with my – hang on a second. Excuse me. Bang, 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 bang. Okay, all right. I don't know what the hell that was. And so, like, it seems to me that, you know, he you have to begin with that motivation. You have to begin with that, like, I'm doing this for my own self-gratification, whatever it is. But in the course of it, right, like, you're gonna find things that are going to upset you. And I believe that, and I understand it's just my own conjurings of what's in another man's mind, and I can't, you know, bring any validity to them. It seems to me difficult to believe that a guy comes, goes through that, tries to prepare himself to make the sort of speeches he makes, comes out and gives the speeches that he makes with the, you know, with the rhetorical tone that he does, and is completely unimpacted by his own words. That to me seems difficult to believe. You know, when the Access Hollywood tape came out, and he comes and he makes this video, you know, saying, you know, oh, you know, he said something to the effect of that running for president had changed him, you know. Now, you know, obviously he's, you know, trying to get people to vote for him. I mean, there's a motivation behind doing this, and whether he really feels bad about talking about grabbing women by the pussy, I think is in dispute. But, like, you know, the substance of what he said was, oh, this race has changed me. I really want to be president. I want to do this. Like, I believe that. I don't think that he was particularly worried about the things that he had said on that video. But I absolutely believe that he's like, he finds himself. I can't imagine a man going through, you know, try to imagine the emotional load of what he went through on the campaign trail, that he's like, okay, you know, I'm approaching this position of power. And, like, I have all these people love me. I've got screaming crowds. Like, there's an emotional load that comes with that. You don't think he's impacted by that?
No, I definitely think he is impacted by that. I mean, the difference is it seems like you agree with me that his first motivation was himself, which is, I don't begrudge him that. I want to make that clear. Like, I'm not saying that he should have been an ideologue first. I mean, that's besides the point. But the thing is like, once you get into a position of power, then you have to look at, well, if he was concerned about these issues, well, what did he do about them? And he didn't make even like the basic moves of like putting people in place that actually cared about the things he talked about. So I just have a hard time believing that he ever really cared. He was totally fine with putting functionaries in place that, you know, there's every reason to believe that he would know that they weren't going to act on the things he wanted them to act on, like Bill Barr or Reince Priebus, or, you know, you can name them down the line. I mean, you know, he was willing to work with all these people and was totally content with, like, not draining the swamp, so to speak, in his own parlance, because I think he just was like, I'm president. I think he looked at it like, well, the Bidens are crooks and they get tons of money from being president. Why can't I do it? And he was very naive to walk into that, not realizing what he was getting into.
Well, if you think that he was naive about it, the implication here is that he's made an error, right? That's a different question from intent. You know, Donald Trump did not
just to be clear before you go on with your point. I agree. I don't think he realized what he was getting into, because he thought, oh, I'm just going to be another president like everybody else, and I'm going to make deals, and it's going to be very lucrative for the Trump family.
Well, whatever he thought was going to happen didn't, right? So, like, he goes to Washington. Right. He doesn't have anybody there, right? So who's in charge of the government? Well, the party's in charge of the government, right? I mean, like, that's the fact. That's the realpolitik of it, okay? So you mentioned Reince Priebus. He was the head of the Republican Party at the time Donald Trump becomes president of the United States. So Donald Trump made him chief of staff. And actually, if you're Donald Trump, that's the thing that makes sense to do, because he's like, hey, listen, whatever happened before, don't worry about it. You're the president now. We're really happy to be in power. Thanks a lot for helping us get here. Just put me in charge. I know how to make everything happen, right? So Reince Priebus is the head of the party, and he's like, yeah, have the head of the party go do all this stuff, and then I'll go tell him what to do, and then he'll go do it. And, you know, of course, that doesn't happen. But by the time he figures that out, you know, the Democrats have the House of Representatives. And so, like, you know, and of course, the things that he wanted to do, you must also keep in mind, you know, anything that he wanted to do legislatively is not, you know, within the powers of the presidency, right? So, like, you know, when he tries to do so much as, like, repeal Obamacare, which is, like, a standard fair Republican issue, it's not even, like, some, like, populist thing. He's thwarted by John McCain. John McCain comes out there, puts the thumb down. He's the one vote in the Senate. You know, he doesn't have the control over the legislature. He's got a bare majority in the legislature. And, you know, he's got Paul Ryan and John McCain to contend with. And then they gave it to the Democrats. So, like, you know, could he have made better staffing decisions? Sure.
Yeah, this is how you know, Democratic politics work, and I understand that completely. But, you know, number one, you can appoint people to position heads within the government that are going to influence things, and the Democrats have no problem doing this, and even the Republicans, when they want to, have no problem doing this. So the idea that Donald Trump couldn't have figured that out in 4 years, and then even then, like, when he runs the 2020 campaign, he, like, softens his message and all this other kind of stuff, and tries to run more of a, like, generic Republican presidential candidate, it doesn't make sense. Like, if he's really has any convictions whatsoever about the issues he's talking about, why would he try to moderate his tone? He won on being not moderate. So, like, even that, it's just bad politics. I mean, he trusted the people around him that had his worst interest in heart, and it's because I don't think he really cared about that. It was more about, I just want to, you know, try to get through this. I just want to be president. I just want to, you know, I don't understand why they're attacking me like this. I just want to make money like Biden. Like, why am I being treated differently? I don't think he understood it, and I don't think that he has any convictions about these ideas. I think he's just personally self-interested.
Well, I appreciate your take, friend, and now we're just down to differences of opinion here.
Yep.
So I'm going to I'll thank you very much for your call, and we'll talk again very soon.
Thanks, Chris. Have a good one.
Take care, pal. 217-688-1433 if you'd like to be on the program. And the more you talk, the less I have to, so please do give us a call. Let's see here. Caller, you are on the Radical Agenda. What's your agenda?
Christy Phoros, my favorite Hellenic political commentator. How's it going?
Doing all right. I'm sorry, what did you say before, my favorite political commentator?
Christy Phoros.
Greasy photos?
I thought you were Greek.
Greek? No, I'm...
Greasy photos!
Is this a prank call?
No, it's not a prank call.
Okay, all right, so I don't...
Are you familiar with Bertrand C. Juvenel?
Am I familiar with what?
Bertrand D. Juvenel, the French philosopher.
No.
Oh. 20th century.
Okay, no, I'm not.
Okay, well, he had this theory about the high-low versus the middle mechanism. I guess it was a different guy who classified it like that. But basically, his theory is about how power has consolidated throughout the last 100, more than 100, like the last 1,000 years in Western civilization, and how basically, throughout history, like the elites have, basically used like the lower classes to attack the middle and carve it up with varying degrees of success.
I think
basically what I'm trying to get at is that, like,
I know a German philosopher who came up with that. Go ahead.
Go on.
So go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say that. I mean, this is a pretty, like, well-known phenomenon, right? Especially if there's no way that if you're a person in Donald Trump's position that you don't know that this is how politics works and how power operates certainly in the United States, right? So, I mean, basically what he did is he a textbook example of that mechanism, right? So he's in, elite person of elite status, and he basically whipped up the middle class against the rest of the elite, right? And there's no way that he just unknowingly or accidentally did that and wasn't aware of the consequences that would result. So, I don't know, the previous caller was trying to make the case that this guy was just completely self-interested and, he's trying to imply that Donald Trump was, dumbfounded as to why he was receiving the treatment that he was. And it just doesn't make any sense. I kind of view Trump as like, he's kind of like one of the last few elites remaining of the old guard, right? The WASPy elites. And his position of power is really predicated on the system that he grew up in and that he profited in remaining in place. You know what I mean? And, So I guess, in some degree, he was, self-interested. But I think at the end of the day, he understands that he needs this robust middle class in order to keep running the fucking... keep making the money he has been making. So, yeah, I don't think he was clueless.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't, look, I don't think that there's nothing about my understanding of the world that would lead me to believe that Donald Trump was, entirely naive. I don't think that he had any idea what he was getting himself into. But, I was never under the impression that, that he stumbled across all of this by accident, He obviously had some. I'm going to let you go because you got an audio problem, pal. 217-688-1433. If you'd like to be on the program, and the more you thought, the less I have to. So please, give us a call. He had to have had some conception of what the political climate of the country is, and you might want to do that too. 217-688-1433. Caller, you're on the Radical Agenda. What's your agenda?
Yes.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to comment on the Trump stuff. Making money doesn't make sense as a motive to me at all. Because
no.
Obviously, that didn't work.
Well, it's not just that it didn't work. It's not just that it didn't work. It's that, like, you know, if somebody goes and does something that they reasonably expect to make money and fail, you know, that's just failure. But it doesn't seem to me that this was something that would be expected to be a profitable enterprise the way he did it. You know, when he goes in there, even if he goes in there and he doesn't carry out the agenda that he's voicing, all of the forces of money and power in this country are heavily invested in spreading the precise opposite narratives that he's interested in spreading. And he had to have known that he'd meet some resistance from those people. I mean, he was mocking them on the campaign trail. The elite. Yeah, they call themselves the elite. We're the elite, you know. And so, like, you know, he had to have understood at least that this was not something that was going to endear him to the people he needs to endear himself to make money, because he's spent his whole life endearing himself to the people he needs to endear himself to make money.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it was probably more just a new challenge, you know. The guy was old and he had done so much. This was something he could do. And he probably had, like, the Kushner Zionist in his ear telling him that, you know, he'd probably be bashed in the press, but they had him under their wing. And, like, some of this more what's going on now wouldn't happen.
Yeah, I gotta figure that's the case. Buddy, I'm going to let you go, but I thank you very much for the call. 217-688-1433 if you'd like to be on the pogrom. Caller, you're on the Radical Agenda. What's your agenda?
Hey, Chris. My agenda is pretty much kind of talking about Trump here. And, if it was just for the sake of wanting to be president and all that, well, he would have accomplished that in the last 4 years. And he could have easily just walked away after election was stolen or whatever. What did he care? He got what he wanted. He was president for 4 years. He could have just...
You bring
walked
up an
away,
important point,
I'm pretty
I'd say.
Sure if he would have...
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just want to thank you for putting it on those terms, right? So, like, even if he acted with entirely cynical motives prior, like, the fact that he's fighting now, I'd say, is all the evidence one ought require that this became something else for him at some point, right? That, like, he's like, okay, you know, these people are going to try to sue and destroy me, and they stole my presidency. You know, he's like, at that point, he's mad. You know, I believe the look on his face when he looks into that camera, and he's like, you motherfuckers, I'm coming for you. That's what he's saying when he's looking into that camera. He's like, I'm not going to let you fucking do this to me. Now, you know, how much of that translates to, I'm not going to let you do that to this country, I'm not going to let you do this to the citizens of the United States, is another question, I guess. But, like, you know, at some point, this becomes about more than him wanting to accomplish something great.
Precisely. I mean, yeah, the thing about it, too, is he would know how to reason with these people that are whittling him down. I mean, he basically had handshake deals, knew these people really well. I mean, his whole family were in with the Cuomos for a long time. And, you know, so, I mean, he could have easily been like, you know, hey, look, yeah, I had my fun. I'm just going to go off into the sunset, whatever. And then none of this crap would have even transpired that they've been putting him through since Biden's been in office. They'd be like, yeah, all right, fine. You know, maybe they would throw some smear at him or whatever, kind of like, oh, you stuck your nose at us, you know, put on your little wrestling theater or whatever have you. But I'm pretty sure they would have just let him go if he wasn't some form of threat to them, you know, and
yeah.
It just, and I think to, you know, a certain degree, you know, I kind of relate, and maybe I'm not on the pulse on any of this here. I don't know. I just can't help but correlate a lot of what's going on now to sort of early, you know, like 1920s Ireland, right? And I can't help but feel the possibility that by doing what they just did to Trump, that they basically turned him into this century's De Valera. But, you know, we'll see where it goes.
Indeed we will, my friend. Thank you very much for the call. 217-688-1433. If you would like to be on the pogrom, and the more you talk, the less I have to, so please do give us a call. Real Tony Soprano says, I'm feeling 2016 energy. His mugshot couldn't have been any better. People are amped up. Niggas for Trump. Oh, I should play that. That's pretty funny. thank you very much for the $25, my friend. Maybe next time sends $3. He says, I pray for the USA. Well, indeed, the USA is in need of your prayers, sir, and the gods thank you. 217-688-1433, if you would like to be on the pogrom. Caller, you're on the Radical Agenda. What's your agenda?
We can learn from the reception of that mugshot. We've been far too accommodating. Our opposition will not afford us the same courtesy. We will benefit by bringing the intensity of our conviction to everything we do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The guy hung up, I gather from the audio. We will benefit from the intensity of our convictions. I think that that's a valid observation. I think that one must moderate the intensity of his convictions in order to engage in the realpolitik that is necessary to have power accrue. That is something that I think is unfortunately lacking. I think that, you know, I've talked about this substantially since I've been home, which is that, like, you know, ideological fervor is not going to make you president of the United States, right? Like, you actually have to, you have to do things, and that are often uncomfortable to people who have noble intentions, because, you know, because of course we are governed by monsters, and so, like, you have to make some compromises, and that doesn't sit well with ideologues, right? Like, ideologues are like, no, the sheer righteousness of my cause will lead me to victory, and that is not the case. But I don't think that that was the caller's point. So I'm not trying to strawman you. I would very much like you to be correct. 217-688-1433, if you'd like to be on the pogrom. Let's see here. Check this thing over here. All right. So before my friend called in with the sound check, I started to tell you about why I would need a sound check, okay? And so I'm trying to fix some things around here. Unfortunately, like, it's actually not that simple to do in a day. And what I end up with is a situation where I've got to get this damn studio back together in time for showtime. and that has to happen in relatively short order. The reason I was late starting today, I was late on my own account. But then I was like, oh, the phones actually were not working. And so I have added some things to my Amazon wish list. If you go to ChristopherCantwell.net/donate, you'll find the link to it there. I usually link to it in the show notes for each show. You could just send me money, too. That's always appreciated. But I added a bunch of things to the Amazon wish list, which are specifically like studio upgrades. If you look at it, you're going to see a lot of wires, okay? Notably, there's like a 20-pack of XLR cables. Talk shop with you a little bit. There's different types of ways that you can connect a studio setup. And over the course of the years, I have collected a very impressive collection of different audio interconnects and wires and whatnot. But they are not of uniform quality. You guys know, if you've been listening for a long time, we started the show calling it Some Garbage Podcast. And it frequently lived up to its name. I didn't actually understand professional audio very well. And I was like, okay, you know, whatever gets the sound signal from here to there will obviously do, right? And as as the years went on, that certainly turned out not to be the case. It is not a thing that happens with uniform quality, of course. And so one of the things that I have discovered is that if I use XLR cables wherever I can avoid a lot of trouble. But not all of my I've discovered that one of my cables was bad just as I was doing this. And I have a cable tester on the way that one of you bought for me. Thank you very much, sir. To thank you to the gentleman who bought me the tester and those other cables. But there's a bunch of other cables on the wish list right now. And if you want to go buy me some audio cables, that'd be a fantastic thing to do. I also have their, you could buy me some fitness equipment too. All the things. You go look at my wish list, and it's not like, it's not a bunch of, you know, I'm not asking you to buy me a nice watch. I'm like, hey, go buy me things that make me more physically fit and better able to do the show. And so those are all things that you want to encourage. So go ahead and spend your money on that. And we'll go back to the phones. What was the other? Oh, so the other thing is, if you watched the episode with Hammer, So I did the episode with Hammer not in my studio, okay? I did that actually in a motel not far from here. And if you've been paying attention for a long time, you know, I used to broadcast from the road all the time. And, you know, it was mostly okay. But I have if you look at on my Amazon wish list, there's you can like comment the things you have notes, okay? And there's priorities and stuff like this. And I note some things are for the mobile setup, and some things are for the home studio, and some things are dual purpose. And so I would like to try to replace basically all of my audio cables with mostly from one brand, where I was able to cost effectively do that. And with change them in type with another brand in some cases. That I'm not going to go through every detail of that, but you know, those are some ways for you to help the show. Other ways for you to help the show are at christophercantwell.net/donate, including my Cash App, which is my cash tag is Edgy Chris. There's a link to that in the show notes for today. If any of you use Strike Payments, I use that. You can send me Strike Payments. I'm Cantwell on Strike Payments. And, you know, of course, the GiveSendGo is givesendgo.com/SPM. 217-688-1433 if you would like to be on the Grom. Caller, you are on the Radical Agenda. What's your agenda?
Hey, Cantwell, can you hear me all right?
I can, sir.
All right, I wanted to just briefly discuss, I think you watched sort of the Republican primary debates a little bit.
Yes.
And you concluded that Vivek won. I think a lot of people also came to that conclusion. I want to see where these motivations come from, because I think this guy is just kind of more or less vying for a seat in Trump's cabinet. What do you think of that?
So, you know, I have reason to doubt that. First reason I have to doubt that is because he has said that he will not accept one. Now, of course, politicians have been known to lie, so I'm not ruling out that possibility. But I would say that it doesn't seem to me that Vivek Ramaswamy would aspire to that, right? He never voted before 2020 is his story. And so it's not like he's always he doesn't seem like the type of guy who aspires towards a cabinet position. He got the idea in his head. I don't know what it is that he thinks he's doing, because he's smart enough to know that he's not going to be the president of the United States. The only potential for him to possibly be president is he's thinking that, okay, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to go fillet Donald Trump on the debate stage, and then if Donald Trump taps out, maybe he'll endorse me. Maybe that's somewhere in his head. But I don't think that he expects that he's going to be president of the United States. And I don't think that I believe him when he says that he will decline a cabinet position. So, you know, there's a lot of reasons that a guy might run for president, not including seeking the presidency. And that's certainly not lost on me. But, you know, he has said that he will not accept a cabinet position. And you know, he's got money, right? Like, Vivek Ramaswamy doesn't need to be, the trade secretary or whatever to have power, you know?
Okay, well, what do you make of all these people in our sort of sphere of politics that are, you know, kind of starting to swoon over this Indian guy?
Look, I think that worse things could happen than Vivek Ramaswamy becomes president, right? I mean, you want Chris Christie to govern you? Go ahead, you know. I think that Vivek Ramaswamy came out and said climate change is a hoax, right? He says reverse racism is racism, which is, you know, it's not satisfying to Nazis, obviously, but, you know, calling out anti-white shit is kind of cool, you know? So I don't think that's so bad. You know, the idea of defunding, you know, granted, he's like, he ends up in a contest over who loves Israel more with Nikki Haley, which, you know, everybody loses that contest to Nikki Haley. But like, you know, the idea that you might in some way reduce the fucking, you know, emptying of our country into Israeli coffers is a pretty foreign concept in American politics generally, in Republican Party politics all the more. And so, like, you know, the idea that somebody even gives voice to those opinions is, well, you know, whether you want to swoon over him is another question. But I think that there's a lot to be gained by you know, by flirting. I think the dissident right has much to gain by flirting with Vivek Ramaswamy's campaign, is, I guess, the best way I can word that.
What do you make of the people saying that DeSantis is sunk?
I'm sorry, the people saying DeSantis sucks?
That DeSantis is sunk after that debate.
Oh, that he is sunk. I mean, I think that DeSantis was sunk from the moment he went back on his pledge not to run against Trump. Okay, so like I don't know what stupid, you know, what you know, advisor or, you know, consultant told him that this was a good idea, but that person gave him very bad advice. Okay, all Ron DeSantis had to do was be a good soldier and wait another 4 years, and he'd be president of the United States. Donald Trump is going to be term limited out, supposing he wins. And so, like, all he had to do is be a good soldier, and he'd be a shoo-in for 2024. Some consultant somewhere.
That's exactly it.
And so some consultant somewhere told him, I got an idea. Why don't you oppose Donald Trump and see how well that works out for your political career? Well, that was very bad advice, I'd say. And so, like, you know, he's not been well served, is my view of it. And so I think that was when he was sunk. Everything that has happened since then is only confirmation thereof.
As the popular saying goes, all you had to do was nothing.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, all Ron DeSantis had to do was be the governor of Florida, right? You know, and come 2024.
Well, he's term limited out as governor.
I'm sorry, say again?
He's term limited out as governor after this term, but then he would be a shoo-in in the Senate.
Well,
and he could have just bided his time, or he could have become a private citizen.
Forget about the Senate. As a matter of fact, being term limited out as governor is, like, perfect, okay? So he goes, he runs for president undefeated is what happens then, right? I don't know if he ever was defeated in another race, but, you know, he was undefeated in his governorship, right? He's term limited out, and it's only the term limits that remove him from office, which is exactly what every Republican wants from their presidential candidate, right? So, like, yeah, you know, like, I'll run for president in 2028, and I'd be like, the only thing that got me out of office was term limits. Those people would have had me king, for fuck's sake. And you know, you do that when you're trying to run for president of the United States, and, you know, I think Republicans would like that. But as soon as he started contemplating, as soon as he refused to say that he wasn't running for president, then Donald Trump comes in with Ron DeSanctimonious, which I think was dumb on Donald Trump's part, frankly. But, you know, you had to know that Donald Trump was going to destroy him, or make every attempt to destroy him, as soon as he discovered that he was opposition. And sure enough, that came to be. And so, like, Ron DeSantis was going to lose this race. That was inevitable. And I would say that to the point that you originally made, that he was, you know, looking for a reset, right? Well, that didn't happen at all. What happened was everybody viewed Ramaswamy as the guy to take down. They ended up attacking him, which made him and Pence the most talked about people during the course of the thing. Or I don't know that everybody was talking about Mike Pence, but Mike Pence kept on interrupting. And so, like, you know, everybody was attacking Vivek Ramaswamy, so Ramaswamy got to talk. Nobody viewed DeSantis as the guy to take down. They attacked Ramaswamy. And so, like, Ron DeSantis was just trying to come across like the adult in the room, and it's like, I'm sorry, asshole, it's 2023 America, and nobody fucking cares about the adult in the room.
No, that's exactly it. Everybody, he came off as robotic and printing out canned statements. Yeah. Ramaswamy, I think, is another guy who's, like, his background is suspect to me. He's you know, been part of Big Pharma and a bunch of shit. I don't know what the entirety of it is, but he definitely was in the global medical industrial complex.
Yeah, he. I read this thing about him some time ago, where, like, you know, that somebody outlined a bunch of these things. They don't stand out in my mind to detail them, but, like, yeah, you know, he was Big Pharma, right? You know, and not the biggest of pharma, but pharmaceuticals nonetheless, and that's obviously a notoriously dirty industry. He was on Laura Ingraham not so long ago, and apparently he went to college on a on a scholarship from some outfit of George Soros's, but you know, that wasn't like a thing where he's like, "Hey, George, I need money for college." It was a rather straightforward public process, but you know, and so like in the course of his becoming a billionaire, he like Donald Trump has had to, you know, make some acquaintances, say.
Well, yeah, it's not too uncommon for Indians to get promoted, you know, maybe unmeritocratically in pharmaceutical positions.
I'm sure that that's the case. That wouldn't surprise me in the slightest, but, you know, I think Vivek Ramaswamy is genuinely like a smart guy who probably knows his stuff, and, you know, he probably... You know, it's, you know, part of the problem with Indians coming to the United States is that they're the next part of the immigration process, right? They displaced the working class, and now they're screwing over the elites that helped them do it. And, you know, you could say that they sort of have that coming to them, perhaps, after what they've done to their race and nation. But, you know, that's kind of what's happening, right?
It could be this, it could be that, it could be the other thing. Thanks for taking my call, Chris.
Thank you very much for making a call. 217-688-1433. If you'd like to get on the phones, do so now. Otherwise, you're not going to have the chance. And so, let me see. What else was I going to say? Dave in New York. When are you going to call me, man? We've gone through 30 episodes of Stage 6 now, and I haven't heard from Dave in New York on the show. Now, Dave emails me from time to time. And Dave, you've got a fan. Like, there's a fan who's like sending me Dave fan letters, and like, you're not even calling into the show. You know, you had a girl, she had hair down there. The audience is waiting to hear about it. You know, I've mentioned it, but I can't do the story any justice, Dave. These guys, they want to hear about the girl with the hair down there. All right, so give us a call, Dave, 217-688-1433. And let's see here. What else do we want to get to before I shut this thing down? Oh, maybe, you know what I'll do? I'll play the clip from Nikki Haley. That was pretty funny. So Nikki Haley and Vivek Ramaswamy at the Republican debate get into who loves Israel more. And that was kind of, I found no shortage of amusement in this, of course, because... You know, these things always become this, right? Like, you have to become president of the United States. To become president of the United States, you can't make enemies of the Jews. It's very important that the Jews don't try to stop you, because they can do stuff like that because they have power. And so Vivek Ramaswamy, you know, had said something to the effect of, you know, we shouldn't be emptying our fucking bank accounts into those of the Israelis. And of course this became a big controversy, and I predicted at the beginning of the debate that he would be attacked for this and he would not strongly defend this position, and I was not disappointed.
I will lead Abraham Accords 2.0. I will partner with Israel to make sure Iran never is nuclear armed. But you know what I love about Israel? And I've been there probably in the last 10 years more than most people on this stage. You know what I love about them?
Nice.
I love their border policies. I love their tough on crime policies. I love that they have a national identity and an iron dome to protect their homeland. And so, yes, I want to learn from the friends that we're supporting and what puzzles
no,
me.
No,
I want to learn from those and apply
you,
those to protect
it's
our
not
homeland,
that
Nikki.
Israel
that
needs
is the answer.
America needs on? Israel.
Okay.
That's the funniest thing ever, right? It's not that Israel needs America. It's that America needs Israel. Is there a lot of evidence to support that position? I think what she means to say is the Jews don't need me. I need the Jews, right? Like, like, is there anybody in the audience that believes that? And I think they actually cheered for that, right? Like, what the hell is wrong with these people? Oh, yeah, because I'm so well informed of American politics that. Oh, my God, man. It's just. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I do one more thing. What was the other thing? Oh, I wanted to do the niggas for Trump thing. That's the other thing that I wanted to do. You know, I've got a show prep group, and every once in a while, not too often, but every once in a while, something good gets posted there. And so let's do niggas for Trump, because that was pretty funny. Niggas for Trump. Let's go. We'll do this thing. Share the screen. Boom. Oh, wrong one. Wrong desktop, you idiot. Hang on a second. The desktop that I'm supposed to be sharing, you retard, is not that one. Is it desktop 2? Yeah, there we go. All right. So let's take down desktop 1. And we'll go over here and bring you over here. And then you don't want to be behind that. You want to be above it because this is Niggas for Trump and you're not behind, you're not beneath that. So let's see what the Niggas for Trump have to say.
Boy, and I mean it.
What do you think about the indictment?
So for those of you who are just listening to the audio, there is an African-American gentleman and he has a white T-shirt with plain black letters that says Niggas for Trump. Now, that is N-I-G-G-A-S, the number 4, Trump, one word on each line.
Oh, it's a bunch of bullshit. It's going around the country. You know, Fannie Willis, she's she went to school with my sister. She's full of shit. She was full of shit then. So she's a puppet for the white liberal that is controlling everything. She's in front, but the white liberal back there pulling those strings, telling her what to do.
Oh, come on. Move
That's
the damn thing.
About
what are you
making
doing?
Making a fool of herself.
Do you think it's going to help his election?
Oh, of course it is. It's going to elevate him all the way. I think we should make Trump king. That's how I feel. We should make him king.
Wouldn't that be like kind of like communistic?
No, that's nowhere near communist. Now, we're just going to make him king, but we still got our freedoms and rights and everything. He fought that. Yeah, Trump for king 2024.
That's actually my URL. I own that URL.
You own that URL?
I can't get your name.
Really? Oh, my name is Niggas for Trump 2024.
I can't
Darren
write that.
Darren Gibson, a former,
that's my nigga.
Former candidate. I'm a former candidate for New York State Governor. Darren Gibson, look me up. Nigga, I'm there. I live up to it, too. Boy. I can scrap, too, but I can get down. Not better. I can't. I got a proven track record. You want to try me out? Try to take this shirt off. I'll give you some.
Off the roadway. I need everybody off the roadway. Sir, I need everybody,
take care
off,
yourself,
I need everybody off the roadway.
So, yeah, so that's Niggas for Trump. And, you know, I should have had my sounds all pulled up, you know.
So let's start with something that I think every one of us would agree with.
Yes, indeed he is. And so when he said white liberal, that's the audio I should have had queued up, but I failed. And so I'm going to end the show. And ladies and gentlemen, go ahead and pay me, why don't you? To ChristopherCantwell.net/donate, SurrealPolitiques.com/join. And we'll be back Monday for Surreal Politiques, Wednesday for the member show, and again Friday for this Fine Uncensored production. Every week. Thank you very much for tuning into The Radical Agenda. Have yourselves a wonderful weekend. Good night.
That's it. It's over. Then we organize the death squads for the people who wrecked America.
You know what you call people you can't talk to? Enemies. And if we want to divide our society into armed camps of enmity, all we have to do is keep doing what we're doing.
The Radical Agenda, the event has turned into an opportunity for the left to push a racial and radical agenda.
Implementing their radical agenda is the only thing they care about. They're bad actors.
And what they want to do here is ram their radical agenda down your throat.
These are great Americans. These are people.